Hello, and welcome to Rewatchable, episode 74, where we're going to be covering Avatar The Last Airbender, season 1, episodes 17, The Northern Air Temple, and 18, The Waterbending Master. In case you didn't recognize the voice talking as host, it's because I've never been the host of Rewatchable before. That has been delegated to Mitch this episode, and it is a lot of fun. I can't wait to read Adiana's recaps, who is also on. Adiana, how are you doing at 7 a.m. in the West Coast?
I'm doing really well. I feel refreshed and ready to greet the day.
Yes, well, good. We have a lot to talk about with healing powers and the like, I'm sure. Oh, no, that happened in the last episode. I'm so sad I wasn't on for that. And then, Mikal, you are, I think, one of the biggest superfans that we have on Rewatchable, so I'm sure you're really excited to be on these two temple episodes, because they're, Air Temple and then Waterbending Master episodes. They're really, really lore-heavy, so it's going to be fun, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Stuff starts to get real at this point.
Absolutely. And then finally,
also,
we have...
Also, Ariana, I hate you because you're awake, and it's 10 o'clock here, and I am not awake.
Seriously, how's she doing it? And then finally, we have our newbie, Brittany, who seems to slowly be falling in love with Zuko more and more every episode, and I'm sure that that has continued a little bit more with a reveal of a certain necklace's purpose, hasn't it?
Oh, no, not so much.
Oh.
I still like Zuko, but I am not on the Zatara
You
train.
Will learn, young one. All right, guys. So contact info in case you want
I think
to
you're, like, insisting to dislike Katara just to, like, get back at me. Like, you're like,
oh, no,
wow,
no, no,
she's
no.
so annoying. I'm just going to keep hating
Katara. No, we're going to get in the second episode. I had a little change. I wrote it in. We're going to discuss that.
Interesting.
I'm excited.
Let's get right to these recaps. Contact info is our email, rewatchable1word.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. And you can always write on this post on Hypeable. That's probably the best way to get hold of us long form. I know that we love to just see whatever comments you're writing. And I know that we're going to save a comment for your comments later on that Adiana brought up that I think is very adorable. Okay, guys. So the first synopsis is Chapter 17, The Northern Air Temple. In this chapter, Aang and the gang make their way over to the Northern Air Temple, and holy smokes, there are some flying people. Is it secret airbenders? Alas, no, they are just a colony of super technologically savvy outcasts. So, Katara is happy because she gets to fly, and Sokka is happy because he is actually a secret genius, but Aang is sad and mad and brokenhearted because when the colony moved in, they had to change and destroy much of the original air temple in the name of advancement. But then everything changes when the Fire Nation attacks, because, as it turns out, the goofy engineer man was supplying the Fire Nation with weapons on the down low to keep his people safe from their fiery wrath. But when the engineer puts his foot down and is like, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, the Fire Nation runs war tanks into their snow fortress, and Sokka has to use his secret genius skills to make a war balloon that drops Nickelodeon slime on them. And in the end, Aang decides that, like Andy, it is okay to sometimes give away your toys to other people who need them more. And evolution and progress can be good as long as we respect the past, too. Wow, so I think that the big conflict here is going to be, the Adiana brings up, whether it's okay to destroy this, you know, beautiful temple in the form of advancement. And yeah, you bring up a good point, Adiana, when you say, is he going to be like Andy from Toy Story and just be like, okay, use my toys and respect them? Or, I don't know, because they did just kind of like... ruthlessly knocked down that one statue right in front of his face, and they were just like, well, you're in the way, sorry, you shouldn't be here. Okay, so the first discussion point that we have is, did anyone get really excited to see that there were more airbenders, quote-unquote, originally? And Brittany, this is a good question for you. Did you think that the show's title was lying to you?
Yes, because there are no more airbenders. I was like, there's no way that there can be airbenders. But I did have this little bit of hope until Aang's face dropped, when he saw, he got really excited. And then when he saw that they weren't like actually bending the air, I was like, oh, okay. All right. It's fine. There's no more airbenders. I like Aang. I like Aang being special besides being the Avatar, being the only airbender.
Yeah.
I've become accustomed to it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like his catchphrase, you know, like, I am the last airbender and the Avatar. He's a double whammy there. And then Adiana, did you believe that they were really airbending?
I did. I thought that there was more airbenders for a hot second there. And I got excited because I think it would be kind of interesting to see Aang interact with his natural environment after a whole season of him being so isolated. But then I remember that Natalie was like, no, he really is the last airbender, guys. She said that, I think, in the first episode. So then I was like, oh, I guess I don't know who these people are.
They're fake airbenders. And, Mikal, maybe you can share in this thought with me that when I first saw them flying around, this time around, I was thinking that they were, for some reason, air bison. You know? Like, they kind of, like, from afar, they were kind of moving around like an air bison would. So I got really excited for that. But what did you think this time around, if you didn't remember properly what was happening?
Well, I mean, I did remember, but I think I was struck again by how mechanical everything looked. You know, they didn't look like air bison to me. They looked like miniature airplanes. And you know, that was kind of interesting to see. You know, like, I mean, it's kind of the whole concept of the episode, right? Like, the, you know, old things, old traditions being kind of mechanized literally and made modern by people who don't have this heritage. So that's kind of a metaphor for the entire episode right there.
Totally. And I think that we can also chalk this up as another Miyazaki reference, because aviation is a big thing in the Miyazaki movies. And to have something mechanical and in the air makes me just, you know, scream things like Howl's Moving Castle and the like. So, yeah, a lot of this can, I think, fit into that genre, if we're chalking up a good long list of times that Avatar literally just quotes the literature of Miyazaki. All right, so the Avatar show did a really good job of describing this handicapped kid, because he wasn't really just like a stereotype. He was really his own character. He had a unique plot line and characteristics and wasn't defined by his disability like whatsoever. That was really unique, and I think that all of us can really appreciate that. So, Adiana, were you comparing this to perhaps another character in another show that you watch where the character is defined by their disability?
I wasn't really thinking about that. I guess just we've talked a lot about on this show about how it does such a good representation for kids about people from other cultures and things like that. Like, we talked in length about the episode where they talk about gender equality. And I guess things like that don't really affect me, because I think we have a lot more of that now where people are like, girls are just as good as you guys. But I think that we still do have, we don't see enough handy, capable people in media, right, even today. And so seeing this was, I thought, was really neat for kids.
Yeah, totally. It makes me really happy to see a character that's as active and, is aviate a word? Aviate? It makes me feel like that would be a proper
airborne
way to describe him, yeah. Airborne. He's a really cool guy, and it's really fun that he is not really letting his disability take him down to where he's even, quote unquote, to quote his father, yeah, on equal ground as everyone else, per se.
And like, his story had nothing to do with his disability, pretty much, like, at all. It was all about his father and the temple.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was like an additional characteristic that just fleshed him out a bit more. All right, so then there was a really odd contradiction to think about here, where we're seeing the advance of the technology in the Air Temple, and it's improving the lives for these refugees, right? But they're not being very respectful of the tradition of the Northern Air Temple. So Aang really is vehement against the fact that they would destroy anything. I personally fall on that side. Now, Mikal, where do you feel it is a line to cross where you should or shouldn't be knocking down statues to advanced technologies?
this is all very interesting in that, especially for this world, you get the sense that this is the first time something like this has really happened, and that, you know, the air nomads had been pretty removed, pretty separate, and obviously dead for the past 100 years. So the idea of their spaces being co-opted for something else is relatively a new one. But I liked, I mean, I saw, you know, I think the show wants you to see both sides. They want you to be angry with Aang when things are not being respected and maybe destroyed to an extent that they don't have to be. But I don't think that they're like, oh, you know, technology is bad. You know, they're definitely not, they're not demonizing either side, which I think is pretty interesting. And, you know, for, you know, at this point in the show, especially, like, where we are so much on Aang's side, to have him have to make a concession like this is interesting.
Yes, I think you bring up a good point that it's, I mean, it's just kind of tough because, as Aliana is pointing out, we really don't have any airbenders around to protect the technology of. So it's like, should we respect the people that aren't here anymore? You know, like, for instance, the Greek ruins or the Aztec pyramids, should those still be preserved as they are? Or should it just be like, let's knock it down and make a mini mall? Brittany?
Sorry, my microphone was on mute. I was really upset the whole episode where when they were knocking things down. I think that they do have to preserve it in some sense, because it's where there were all this hundreds of years of history where there were airbending avatars. And just because Aang disappeared, like, they know that the avatar is still out there. So when he comes back, like, I feel like they could have done it in a more respectful way. They could have definitely repurposed this area, but when you're walking into that, the main part, when the, like, ruins are completely, like, cracked and, like, those steam pipes are, like, coming through the walls, I feel like they could have maybe done a nicer job of repurposing the area and still preserving the history and be respectful. Because the culture is, like, such a huge part of this show, and being, like, honorable and respectful. And I feel like they just threw that out the window in order to, like, preserve their people.
Yes, I think that it's interesting that you bring up the fact that they could have found a good balance, because to me it's odd that the one sacred room that you had to airbend to get into was already opened. So... and you know, repurpose into, like, a Fire Nation supplies room. But it makes me think, how in the world did that room get opened in the first place? Did they, like, fake airbend? I mean, I'm sure that, as we're about to talk about, that the leader of the air settlers, as we're calling them, is really intelligent. So he probably found a way around getting into there technologically, but I can't think of a way he would have done it off the top of my head. Nicole, I'm assuming you would have the same amount of foresight as I would in this universe to think of a way that he could have gotten in there. Can you think of a way?
No.
He probably found a secret entrance. I mean, that's probably more realistic, but that's a big plot hole if you don't answer that one. Yikes.
Sorry, just to go back a second.
Go ahead.
But I think that obviously they were very stupid people, as people tend to be when they're desperate. And I don't think that they should, like, this is basically the equivalent of taking, like, the Aztec Pyramid of the Sun and turning it into a McDonald's. But,
No, it's not. It's not a McDonald's. It's the equivalent of taking an Aztec temple and turning it into, like, a refugee center.
Well,
you know, you could still have objections to that, but, like, there's more reasons than just, like, oh, we want to sell fast food.
Well, if you had let me finish, McCall.
Okay, sorry, Ariana. Go ahead.
I was going to say that, like, we can look at that in living a life of luxury comparatively, because they're trying to stay alive and they're running from the Fire Nation, who's constantly at them. And so if this is the one place they felt safe, I think that in different circumstances, like if we were in a zombie apocalypse, like, yeah, let's do whatever we have to. So stay safe. So I think that's the difference.
I see your point, but I think that the balance comes in where they were destroying that one room to have elevators and to pump steam into the air surrounding the castle so they could glide. I think that that was a line that was crossed. I'm all for doing whatever you have to do in order to stay safe, and that makes complete sense that they were repurposing this area to, like, live and whatever. But I think knocking down, like, statues to build a bathhouse and having the pipes coming through the walls in order to, like, let people, like, fly around on gliders for fun was a little bit more of a luxury area.
But are they ever going to get to go anywhere else? I think they're assuming they're going to have to live there forever. The Fire Nation's been in control for 100 years. They probably will be for 100 more.
Oh, yeah, and that's fine, but I'm saying they could, like, build the pipes not through these, like, wall art paintings that tell the history of the people. They could have, if they wanted an elevator or something, like, there was a way around that, I think.
Well, maybe. You guys bring up a lot of good points about, like, how they could have done this better if there was a way to do that, and whether or not this was more legitimate because it was a refugee home. And I think that this is an answer we're not going to find at all, because there's no one single answer to this complicated of a problem. And I would love to hear what the listeners have to think about what they would do if they were in this tribe, if they would take advantage of this awesome space that they have to make it to some effect unawesome historically, but awesome again technologically, you know. So it's a really big catch-22, and it makes you really, really think. As Adriana writes, Avatar does make you think. There's a lot of gray moral stuff going on in this whole entire series. I can give you that much. So, yeah, this air settler engineer is a complete genius. He's really cool with, like, his candle clocks that, you know, pop off and stuff. And he brought out a really cool side of Sokka, where Sokka started to come up with not only his own cool inventions, but really neat workarounds to getting things done, like the eggs and the gas room. So I really liked the fact that Sokka wasn't just a comedic relief in this episode. He started to become a big supporter for the gang in general. So, Brittany, did you start to care more for Sokka past his misogyny that he's often displayed, where he's, you know, shown a great characteristic in his technological intelligences, if that makes sense?
Yeah, this episode I was really glad to see Sokka go off with the genius person, because you could tell that he was really intrigued by it, and it wasn't for the first time they were at somewhere where there was a bender that they needed to go after, or they were trying to solve a different type of problem. This was something that he was genuinely interested in. He wanted to see what the master genius does he have a name? I don't know what to
I
call
think
him.
So, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah,
he probably
I don't
has a name in, like, the
is.
Comics or something. What does it be called?
I think he's called the Mechanist.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay.
So right, he doesn't even have a name. That's fine.
That's slash Teo's father.
Yeah, Teo's father is what I've been referencing him as.
Yeah, but he was a little, you know, he was a little crazy, but I think Sokka is also a little crazy. So they kind of, like, melded together. But I always like Sokka. And I'm beginning this episode, it was really cool to see him, like, have, besides that episode where he did, like, the ship challenge thing, this is, like, another area that you get to see his intelligence at work. And
I couldn't help but just think of, like, Sokka leveled up when he did that, run through the rocks kind of deal. And I guess the same thing with this episode, like, Sokka's tech points have raised or something, because he like learned amongst his adventures and a side quest how to build bombs and the like. And yeah, Sokka was really resourceful, especially in that final attack when he throws the canister down. And then I want to just bring up a quick note of what happens with the hot air balloon, because we haven't gotten to that attack yet, but when we're talking about technology, that the Fire Nation seemed to be really excited by the fact that they found that crashed air balloon. So that just goes to show the times that Avatar takes place in, and the fact that that technology would be a really amazing thing for these people to be able to use. And obviously we're seeing a lot about how being in the air is a big advancement. So Adiana, do you see this going anywhere? And was it just, did it just kind of smell too much that that scene was in there for you, that you saw something else coming?
I don't know. I guess they're going to use it as a bomb now, like bomb the Northern Water Tribe. I don't know. Okay. I feel like it doesn't matter that much, but
okay.
Maybe it does. No, I mean, I'm sure it's going to matter. I just don't see why that would be such a huge advantage.
All right. And
comparatively, I mean, you can make fire. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, but now they have fire in the sky. Yeah. They can make it
They'll
rain.
Be great down there.
Yeah.
Well, Mikal, does it shock you that this is the moment where air travel is first introduced in the Atlas series? Or did this kind of come off as a natural introduction to it? Because, I mean, what you and I can say in a non-spoilerly context is that there are a lot of moments that are very nuanced that turn out to have a large influence, and this isn't supposed to be a reference of these air balloons really, but more of moments that I can't really mention because they would give away why they're important. But Mikal, do you agree with me that there are moments in the show that are a lot more nuanced that the newbies aren't going to catch, that are really going to explode out and be like 10 times bigger throughout the entire series?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think this one kind of asks you to remember it, which is really why I like this particular moment, because I love that it's like, yay, the good guys win, everything's good. And then it's like, oh, no, this thing that we use to defeat the bad guys is actually potentially going to be used against us, and that could be really bad. And that the good guys have no idea about this. So
it's
that's
like
something
a metaphor
that I,
for life.
Yeah. Exactly. With fire. Yeah, but I mean, yes, there are, like, when you watch the series over again, there are a couple of things, sometimes unbelievably subtle things, that you go like, what? Seriously? Wow. That's actually what you do, literally, those exact words.
Yeah, very, it's like, fair. I do.
It's like how when we made the nukes and it was like, yay, and then everyone else made the nukes and
Yeah, it can relate to that if you wanted it to, I suppose. There's a lot of, you know what, Mikal, actually, that's actually a really good analogy that Adiana just made, isn't it? If you think about, like, a certain type of something that I'm not going to mention, but you know what I'm talking about, probably just from being as aloof as I was, didn't you?
No.
Well, that's good.
But I know that the Fire Nation does other stuff. So.
I know.
Because a lot of
times when the super fans put each other on the spot, and they're I don't know.
I try so hard to just communicate it to, like,
in, like, 3 years, so I don't remember all the things.
And I'm trying so hard to, like, communicate it to, like, the super fan listeners too at the same moment, and I'm hoping that someone noticed.
You were so vague. You were like, yeah, you remember that one moment that happened that
But there
one
is.
Time.
There's something that's that hasn't happened yet that's gonna set off kind of another nuclear bomb in the Avatarverse, and it's gonna be really exciting when you guys finally realize that it's a thing, and I'm just, oh, I can't wait for that moment. So yeah, Aniana, really, really good analogy there. I really, really enjoy that. Okay,
okay.
So
oh, I do just want to say about Sokka, though, I forgot that this is kind of where this turns out to be a pretty major development for him. I don't think that's a spoiler, just that, like, Sokka becomes, like, his intelligence really starts to come out, and his like, planning skills and tactical skills really start to develop, and that becomes a big part of his character. And I forgot that this episode, which I think a lot of the time I would skip, would get overshadowed in other ways, is kind of the origin of that.
Yeah, he's, like, really smart. I was super surprised, because I feel like in the pilot, they made him seem like such a goober, like, he's compared to Katara and Aang, but he's a smart guy.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Adiana, of just character development, that Sokka, I'd say, has seen the most out of all the characters thus far. Because they've all seen a lot, but Sokka has learned that there are different cultures.
They have not all seen a lot, no. I think only Sokka, really.
I don't know that you're thinking too much about Katara's abilities, because she used to be a very unskilled waterbender, and I mean, as we're about to talk about in the next episode, she like kind of kicks total ass, and Aang is...
Oh, but I feel like that doesn't have... Well, maybe it does. I don't know about bending, but I didn't think that that had very much to do with like her personality. Like, we'll talk about that next episode, but I guess I thought that she had been pretty one note until the next episode.
Interesting. Oh, I'm excited to get to that whole bit that you're referencing there with her fights and all that.
Well, before we get to the next episode, because I know we're, like, nearing the end of this, but while we're on Sokka, I was, and before, I had a little bit of a shift in my feelings on Katara, because they do come in the next episode. They will change. But while we're still in Brittany not liking Katara mode, when Sokka was explaining the balloon and how he figured it out, when Katara interjects and tries to make a joke about his hot-headedness and they laugh, I was so furious, because Sokka was having this, like, he was so proud of himself and, like, so excited to explain this to everyone, and she had to make that joke. She just had to take it away from him. And but then she did change, and she was like, oh, that's actually quite a good idea. Like, she was shocked that her brother was smart, but I was so angry with her. If I hadn't watched the next episode, like, if this was the episode where it ended, there would have been, like, a Katara, like, tirade coming from me.
Adriana and I would have fought vehemently against you.
I was so mad at her for that split second. I was like, that's it! I'm done with her! I cannot handle it! She is so rude and mean and self-centered, and she has to be the best all the time. But then, you know, we'll get to the next episode, but man, was I mad at her.
Yeah, and just for reference, I think the joke was when Sokka was trying to describe the hot air balloon, he was asking the hypothetical question, well, how do you keep a lid on hot air? And Katara's like, I wish we knew that, right, guys? So it's a low blow.
So angry.
Funny, Sokka is full of hot air a lot of the time. I love Sokka.
Yes.
It was his moment, and she was just...
But that's what sisters are for, Brittany.
Exactly.
No, I am not that mean.
You need someone to knock you down to your own size again. Like, if you kind of become big-headed and you think that you're kind of all high and
mighty. But this was just the first moment. It was just the first moment where he was finally, like, being excited about knowing something that wasn't about bending, and she took him down a peg. It was just...
Well, to begin, I wouldn't expect a sister to react in any other way, because for a sister to be, like, you know, completely and utterly proud of a brother, it's a big deal, because there's always some kind of rivalry going on, and she doesn't really want to...
No, just like...
She was proud. She was proud of
him.
She
was also proud of him, but she also didn't need to make that comment. She didn't need to.
Well, it was a funny joke regardless. I laughed at it. I'll give you that much.
Okay. I did not laugh.
All right, guys. So then let's talk more about just the fact that the engineer was supplying the Fire Nation with weapons in order to keep his people safe. That seems like a really classic refugee kind of deal. And this whole plot actually really felt like something that I would read in, like, you know, an English literature class of like a book taking place during, like, medieval times or something, like protecting the rest of your village from the attacks by supplying weapons to the enemies. So was it practical that the engineer was doing this, or should Teo have... Are we with Teo basically saying that, you know, that's not right, you shouldn't have done that, and I can't believe you lied to me for all these years? Mikhail?
I mean, I think it's a complicated situation. I think, you know, it sucks that the mechanist did this, but, you know, this is part of a larger... He's not, like, pro-Fire Nation or anything. You know, he's trying to keep his people safe. And I think that this is part of the theme that's been developing through the series that, and I think develops further in the next episode, that, like, this war makes good people do bad things. And, you know, they're not, it's not necessarily as simple as, like, oh, well, you're a good guy and you're a bad guy. You know, there's a lot of crap that happens and goes on to make people do the things they do. And I, you know, I like that Teo was angry about it. I thought that was realistic and and hard to watch, especially because Teo was the reason the Mechanist was doing everything. But I think that, like, I don't think we're supposed to, like, just hate him and condemn him.
I think, though, with Teo, he hasn't really had to experience the Fire Nation that much, has he? Because he was like a baby when they destroyed his village. Isn't that what he said? And his mom died?
Yes, but I think that, to his credit, he is disabled from the effects of the Fire Nation's attack.
But so I mean, he hasn't... every day. Like, his dad has kind of shielded him from the horrors of the Fire Nation. If this man hadn't done this, his whole tribe, I mean, his whole people would be dead, right? Like, the Fire Nation would have killed them. So, I think it's understandable that Teo's angry because he's like, righteousness! But he would be dead if his dad hadn't done this. They would all be dead.
And the argument can always be made that perhaps, like, a greater hero would have denied the Fire Nation and rather taken and faced death rather than help the murders of so many other people. So,
definitely
another moral gray area. And I don't know what I would do personally. I would just.
But I don't think it's ever fair to ask somebody to do that. Like, I don't ever think that it's okay to be like, oh, well, you should have died for this. Like,
no,
I don't consider that a valid thing to ever ask of a character, no matter who they are. So for me, like, yeah, I would have loved it if, you know, the Mechanist could have come up with another way of doing it. But I don't think that it's just like, oh, well, you just die, you know, or like, just let your whole, you know, let your son be killed, let everything, you know, NBD, you know, it's like serious stuff that goes on. And, you know, when people are coerced by powerful forces, they usually cave to that.
I mean, this goes to show the very overused trope by now that Avatar is not a kid's show. When Teo says, how can I be proud of you when you are using your inventions for murder? And that really, it brings up a really interesting argument that we're talking about right now. And visual, I could even say, because, I mean, you could probably imagine, like, these bombs raining desolation down on, like, poor little Earth Kingdom villages and stuff. And it's really dark, and it's a hard thing to wrap your mind around, especially if you were a child watching the show. Because I remember personally, when I was first watching this episode, I wasn't really sure what to make of the fact that the show went there. And it really went there, that death is a very real part of this Avatar universe, and it's not going to let its Nickelodeon syndication hide that whatsoever. It's maybe going to tiptoe around the line sometimes, as we're learning slowly but surely that people won't necessarily die on screen, or they'll kind of fall off and scream into the water, but they'll just always be seen swimming off. But this was, like, definitely a real reference to a genocide, and it was very dark, as I said. So, does anyone have any other thoughts on this engineer supplying the Fire Nation business, Brittany?
No, I think you guys summed it up rather well. I was letting the more intelligent people take that argument because I could not freeze my thoughts.
Well, I say you're pretty intelligent if you're able to figure out whatever Nickelodeon was doing with releasing the episodes of season 2 of Atla Online, because you and I were trying to figure out what you could tweet out, and it was confusing because they, like, kind of sort of released some episodes from season 2.
Yeah, you unlocked, like, 5 episodes of the end of season 2, and here's some clips from all of the other episodes. It's like, I don't know, when did we unlock this, or how? Was there a game? I missed it.
Yeah.
So
give yourself more credit. You're pretty smart. All right. So, talking about what Ariana dubs as a castle, which I guess it kind of looks like a castle rather than a temple, right? But it's surrounded by snow, and she was wondering, why can't Katara just waterbend them all to, you know, Kingdom Come with her abilities? She's really just kind of surrounded in her element. So, Ariana, you're evolving with your thoughts with Katara, and I'm really interested to hear why you think she wasn't able to quite yet waterbend them all, quote, to can I swear on an unrewatchable that's this much? I don't know. I'm like, it's kind of
probably
a family
not.
Business.
This is a kid's show, yeah. So we're gonna have to come up with something for the next synopsis. I don't, because she hasn't had training. I don't know. See, this is what I mean. It would be really useful for Katara to get training so that when things like this happen, she can just be like, oh, snowfall, and then they're all covered in snow. So, I don't know.
Or bloody icicles.
I was just so confused. Why? Yeah. She didn't try waterbending, like, at all. It was probably not convenient to the storyline.
And but... she, you know, she did do some pretty epic waterbending at one point when she, like, caused those icicle formations to come up from the ground in a very Elsa way, actually. I know we could probably make a million and one Frozen references with Katara if we wanted to, but that's kind of the first thing that reminded me of it with how Elsa creates those ice spikes when she's running away from everyone in the beginning of the movie, but... you're right, she does need some training, and we're going to see a lot of that in the next episode, so we'll put a bookmark in that point quite now. But I do agree that it can come off as a bit weird that up until she has the confidence to do something, she won't do it. But it shouldn't be that weird if you know Katara as well as perhaps McCall and I do, because she often needs, like, a justification or a gratification to know that she's doing what is okay and what is good and what is awesome. McCall, do you have anything else to add on to that?
Not really. I mean, I didn't actually think of that, that they were surrounded by snow. I mean, I guess you could say that, you know, she wasn't really in close enough proximity to the snow to be like, oh, I can make this water and, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think that part of the thing is, like, this is a Sokka episode and next episode is a Katara episode. So, like, you know, it'll all even out at some point, but yeah. You know, for the sake of storytelling.
Yes, yes. All right. So we've pretty much covered all of what's going on in this episode. So I'd love to go on to scenes and lines if no one else has any final thoughts on the episode. And, Brittany, I feel like you've been the most quiet, so do you have any final rundown of what you were thinking about Katara, perhaps, at the end of the episode?
Well, at the end of the episode, once they had their little teamwork fighting the Fire Nation moment, you know, I calmed down a bit from my rage. No, I'm just kidding. This kid's show is getting me really worked up.
Oh, you ain't seen nothing yet, my dear.
Yes, indeed.
So, yeah, I don't have any closing thoughts, I guess.
Well, what do you think about, like, the quite literal Nickelodeon slime that was being hit?
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And I think Ariana, like, really hit the nail on the head in her description where they were dumping Nickelodeon slime, because I did think about that. Because when you're watching this episode, the little, like, Nickelodeon, I don't know what viewers you guys are watching it on, but the little Nickelodeon logo is kind of, like, in the bottom corner and, like, slime is falling from the sky. I was like, that's pretty awesome.
Oh, that's funny. I could only imagine that sound clip of Aang saying, "We need more slime!" was definitely used for the Kid Choice Awards. Come on.
It reminded me of that show. Do you guys remember the one where they had the, like, four celebrities answering questions and then they would get slime? Yes, figure it out! That's what I thought of with the slime falling from the sky.
What was Danny's last name? Because
Tribby.
Okay, Tamborelli,
yes.
Because, like, the secret slime action is always, like, being Danny Tamborelli. And he would just get fined.
Oh, jeez.
You kids and your 90s nostalgia. All right, so favorite scenes, guys. Mine was when Momo was up in the air eating those bugs and enjoying himself on Cloud 9. Quite literally, he was just, like, mouth open and, like, blah. It was funny. It was cute. So, McCall, what was yours?
My favorite scene was the tag, like, the stinger with the mechanist and, not the mechanist, but the balloon and, like, them being like, oh, we have found this technology. And it's like, oh, I was not anticipating that. Like, I think I remember the first time I watched this episode just being like, okay, this is a fine episode. Fine. We got, you know, everything we needed to get. And then it was like, oh, wait, potential consequences. I appreciate that.
Yeah, good point. It was really, it's a morally ambiguous. It's like, what do we do with the fact that we created the weapon for the enemy, right? So, Ariana, what was yours?
Mine was when Sokka was being really smart with the natural gas and the eggs, because I was thinking, wow, that's, like, such common sense, but it's also really elevated thinking. So I liked that.
Yeah, I can't say I would have thought of that, but would that have actually chemically, I suppose, worked? I don't know. I don't know enough about
it. We use that today.
So that's, yeah, that's like, well, I know we sent gas with, like, we, like, instill the gas itself when we produce it. But would it work to put something smelly in a room that was full of natural gas? Because I guess it would to that same effect, right? I don't know.
Yeah, then if you smell the smelly stuff, you know the gas is out, too.
Yeah, and I find that really interesting that gas in your home only smells as bad as it does on purpose because it's poisonous and you're meant to be leave your house if you smell it. But it, like this episode says, it doesn't smell, taste, or feel like anything. And yeah, so it's a good little chemistry lesson from Avatar there, isn't it?
Yeah, and then if it smelled good, you would just be, like, sitting there, like, imagine if taking it in, so.
Imagine if they made it smell like cinnamon, like, apple pie or something. I would never leave the house. I'd be like, this is worth death. All right, and then, Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when, what's his name, Teo, when he decides to take Aang to the one preserved area of the, like, Northern Air Temple, and he understands, like, he doesn't push Aang to open it, even though he really wants to know what's inside. He respects that Aang is holding on to this culture, and he's upset that a lot of it's been taken down, and he doesn't, like, push him or do anything. He just wanted to let Aang know it was there, and I thought that was a really cute moment that there are these people who are kind in the world.
Indeed there are. You just have to find the right group of people and you'll find that yourself is all yourself, that you find that you're a lot happier because there are people not going to shove you into what they want you to do, and they're just going to let you be happy doing what you want to do. So I ship the friendship of Teo and Aang. It made me happy. Really did. All right, so then favorite lines. Mine was the epic moment that Aang has when the Fire Nation liaison is coming up to get the goods from the mechanic and the mechanist, and he jumps up and kind of, like, punches the guy in the face with airbending while saying, "This deal is over," with, like, a shadow on his face. It was so, like, Arrow or Batman. It felt like he was such a vigilante jumping up and doing that. It was great. I loved it. And then, Michal, what was yours?
I liked the little, like, I like it when they do scenes that kind of go longer than you feel like they are going to, which was the thing when Katara was, like, trying to land the air glider, and she was like, "Wait, how do I land the thing? What if I, like, swallow the bug? Yes, that was a bug," which maybe I shouldn't have picked because I wound up with a bug in my coffee, and now I don't have coffee.
But, oh, no, the irony.
Yeah, I know. It's hilarious. But I like that. I like that it was just a callback to the whole bug situation, and I'm gonna stop talking about bugs.
Yes, bugs are creepy, crawly, and no one's favorite thing to deal with. Okay, Adriana, what's yours?
Mine was when Katara and Sokka were talking, and Sokka tells her, "Do you want me to be like you or to be totally honest?" And she goes, "Are you saying I'm a liar?" And he goes, "I'm saying you're an optimist." Same thing, basically. So that's probably definitely true, living where they're living. There's no reason to be optimistic about anything. It's a Fire Nation looming.
You know,
that's a very sophisticated line, now that I think about it.
Yeah, it has me thinking about The Walking Dead, and it's like, if you're optimistic in that universe, it is almost like you're lying to your group, because you know that the walkers are coming to get you, and, like, the firebenders are coming to get you no matter what. And so, yeah, that is a lot deeper. I like that you picked that line, Adriana. And then, Brittany, what was yours?
Mine happened at the end of, like, the beginning of the episode, where they were hearing all of the airbender tales and about the flying people. And they were like, "Oh, they laugh at the airbenders. They laugh at gravity." And Aang says something to the effect of, "I laugh at gravity all the time. Ha ha, gravity." I just thought that was really cute and, like, very Aang being Aang.
I laugh in the face of danger. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Gravity's funny.
But it, It was almost like not even like he had an idea of like, oh, I'm going to laugh at it because it's not scary. It was just like, I just laugh at gravity. yeah, I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I always appreciate those cute little anglers. All right, guys. So, chapter 18 of season 1, The Waterbending Master. The synopsis is going to be creatively spoken because Adiana had a lot of strong feelings and emotions to convey via her colorful language, we can say. Okay, so in this chapter, Aang and the gang finally make it to the Northern Water Tribe, and
Appa's... Oh my gosh, Mitch, you're not even going to insert, like,
I can insert, okay, can we make, like, a fake a curse word for all of rewatchable? I would appreciate that. Like, what's a good word for a flameo? All right, so... In this chapter, Aang and the gang finally Flameo make it to the Flameo Northern Water Tribe, and Appa is tired, and Sokka is horny, and Katara is excited. Well, excited and scared. Sokka makes the plays.
Is that the woods reference?
Huh?
Yeah, that's an Into the Woods
reference. Oh, good! Nice.
Oh, yes,
and
it
I
is.
Insist, Mitch, that you use like your all caps voice when necessary.
Yeah, I was going to say, because last week there was not an all caps voice for, and then everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked, and I was a little upset. I'm not going to lie.
I'll do as much as I can without waking up this whole entire apartment complex. How about that? All right, so.
Yeah, you wake them up.
It's worth it for the merits of rewatchable. Sokka and the play is gonna makes the play is gonna play proud by snagging a hot ice princess girlfriend, but then they have to break up because bummer, she's engaged, and being 16 and beautiful is tough. Sing it, Blair Waldorf. Aang finally starts his waterbending training, but when the waterbending master rejects Katara for being a girl, she has to learn to become a boring Flameo doctor, while Aang gets to learn to blow Flameo up. So, later that night, the gang is all like, OMG, the Northern Water Tribe sucks! They suck! Those Flameos suck! And Aang decides... Ariana, you're torturing me here. And Aang decides he will not stand for this injustice. And the next day, the waterbending master is like, ha, kid, ha, ha. But then everything changed when the bad Flameo Katara attacks. She's a hot-headed little firecracker, and she's not taking this misogynist Flameo no more. She lays it down like Beyonce, channeling Maya Angelou, and in the style of
how do you say that, Brittany?
It's like, well, first of all, she's from, like, this weird, like, small place, so it's pronounced, like, really, really strangely. But anyway, it's from Beyonce, so just, you'll understand.
Okay.
It's fine. From her music.
Okay, good. So she's channeling Beyonce in this fight. She's grossly she's grossly underprepared and out of her league, but she don't care. She starts blasting icicles like she's the Mother Flameo Idina Menzel, and she lets it go because she's fueled entirely by rage and the need to be right in about everything. And the wedding master is like, wow, you're pretty good, but I don't care. But, oh, wait, your necklace is relevant. And my hot fiancé left me because I suck and didn't respect her as an equal human being. And so now I think I will atone for my sins and go grab a mitt, kid. You can play with the boys after all. Wow, that was a great long sentence. I liked that. Meanwhile, in another plot line, Aro sings sweet love songs and Zuko's ship gets blown up, but no worries, guys. He's cool and will totally be relevant in the finale, probably. Yikes. Okay, guys, so.
Sometimes I feel like I should just read my own synopsis.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
I don't know if you guys can handle my long sentences.
I love them.
And... listen, I made it through that comment.
Oh my gosh, Brittany. That was probably the best reading I've ever heard. That was really great.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's a fun challenge. I'm always up for it. And I'm always up for quickly inserting a flameo whenever I'm coming upon one of Ariana's very PG-13 words, but
it doesn't have the same punch, though.
I know. I wish it did. And it's funny because on the Pokemon podcast we did Pika was our swear word, and it worked great because we kind of like inserted Pikachu saying Pika with it, and it just kind of like it popped and it sounded like a swear word after a while. But like flameo, we're gonna have to work in there a little bit because it's gonna take a while before that really feels like the real deal. So let's just keep on flying with it, I suppose, in the meantime, unless someone else can think of something better. All right, guys, so Appa really just flew around the whole entire world to get to the North Pole, and he did it in like less than 80 days. Not only is he a trooper for doing that, but why does he, like, he must understand, like, what's really going on more than everyone else, because he is, like, pushing himself to the 20th percentile of his functionality. I don't know if that made any sense, but I'm assuming you guys got what I meant. But his extremities of Appa's physicalities, trying to fly everywhere and carrying so many people all the time. All right, so Mikala, is this even fair to make him do all this, or is it kind of just like, you don't have a choice? Like, I'm glad you're doing this, Appa.
Well, since he belongs to Aang, yeah. So, you know, I'm proud of Appa. I mean, I was more into the, like, the reactions of the gang, which were, I think, maybe mirroring the reactions of people who've been watching the show straight through. It's like, are we at the Northern Water Tribe already? You know, and then it's like, oh, well, yes, we actually are.
I know. It's definitely are we there yet moment when we finally just kind of like plop there. And it comes unexpectedly, too, because the last episode had a lot of significance because it was, you know, something of a reinstatement of Airbender tribalism, and we're learning a lot more about Aang's past and stuff. So I kind of expected, watching again without really looking that forward, of what's coming up, another episode between these at least. And all of a sudden we're at the North Pole, and I'm like, okay. And it kind of happened.
I know. I felt like they were never going to get there. I was kind of surprised. So I was like, they're probably never going to make it to the North Pole.
Like, it's just season 3, episode 18, we'll finally make it.
Yeah. No, they were just never going to make it. They were going to keep getting stalled by, like, blue spirits and
this
cabbage.
Isn't Lord of the Rings. I mean, they do get the icy mountain.
It does feel like the Hobbit movie, you know, when the birds leave them off at, like, the mountain. Like, just ride the birds to where you need to be, because you don't need to stop. You just don't need to stop. And made this 3 movies. I was so angry. I'm still angry because it's not over.
No, it's not. But hey, Lee Pace is going to be in there. Shout out to Pushing Daisies.
Let Pushing Daisies die. It's over.
Oh, jeez. Oh, no. Well,
kids.
I was like ready to punch Sokka in the face when he's like, can't he go any faster? As like, kid, let's think about this. This water buffalo has literally like flown around the world, like to the other side of the planet, and you're sitting there complaining, like just floating along. So,
but wasn't that a really pretty moment props. When they first arrive into the, you know, town, and the ice is melted down to rise them up in a levee, and you know, Aang's kind of just like smiling and waving to everyone, and Sokka sees Yue, and he's like, oh! You know, I thought that it was really epic, and it kind of felt, for some reason, like a Star Wars moment to me, like, you know, homecoming of the heroes kind of deal. And I really thought that moment was beautiful. And it's funny too, because the music, it was really well orchestrated, but the instruments sounded really rudimentary. They sounded like a synthesizer or something. I don't know. It was weird. But Mikhail, I know you kind of tune into the music probably as much as I do, from, you know, how much we're into the series by now. But did you notice what I'm talking about with like that synth music going on with that beautiful orchestration?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's like you know, on like a keyboard where you can kind of make it sing if you have like the opera voices on. It sounded like they were just kind of jamming on those buttons for a bit, and I was like, ah, oh, it's ruining this beautiful moment for me, because it's just it's really, really cool sounding, but not with the instruments they're using. So you had a side note on that, guy. So Then Iroh, speaking of music, is sitting around and singing Winter, Spring, Summer, and Fall, which I will not be singing at this early hour. And it was kind of cute.
I love that song.
Does it come back again, Mikal?
I don't remember. I don't think so. But Iroh has a couple of songs, and they're all amazing and precious.
Oh, yeah, he's going to have a crushing song. Just you guys wait. Yikes.
I thought it was kind of, like, funny. He's singing about the four seasons, right? He's like, four seasons of love is like something out of Rent.
Well, that really is, though. Come on, that's great. Oh, that's cute. Yes, that was fun. No, but I mean, what's he doing? Just kind of, like, making friends with the crew, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and well, personally, my interpretation of this song, because I guess I'm just going to interpret it, it's just like, you know, Iroh is so kind of balanced and, you know, like the four elements and like four seasons for love. You can love all the seasons and love all the elements, and, you know, I dig it.
It is taking everything.
That's deep. McCall.
It's taking every ounce of my being to okay. just... start going into Seasons of Love, really, though, because it's like McCall was like pretty much quoting the song there. What a musical episode. I didn't expect that.
To be fair, we don't know how long an Avatarverse year is, but
yeah, because I don't know, they're not really on the planet Earth. I wonder what their planet's called. Has that been answered before, like a commentary of the DVDs or something?
I don't think so.
That's a shame. Well, no, I've heard... Well, I mean, they talk about bending Earth, so I assume we could still call it Earth, but it's definitely an alternative Earth, because I don't know that we're going to even look like that in our past, even with Pangea days. It wasn't really like we were spread out as wide as that ever, so... Yeah, it's an interesting universe, give you guys that much. And kind of a side note on that, too, while we're talking about the universe and the like, do you guys ever find it odd when you're watching a show and everyone just kind of happens to speak English? I mean, like, Doctor Who's a show that will work that around by saying that the TARDIS is translating it all in your brain, but when you're watching a show that takes place in an alternate universe, or, like, in space or something, like, in this universe where you're just in... another world, everyone speaks English all around the world. No one else speaks a different language to the best of our knowledge, unless I'm missing one that we've come up against. Brittany, do you
find they're not actually speaking English in Avatar.
Well, I know that much, but because I'm saying, like, for our convenience...
The writing...
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying for our convenience...
No, just I was going to say that...
I'm sure you have a better point. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, like, all of the writing is in Chinese, I think. So I'm assuming, like, we're not supposed to be, like, they're actually speaking English, they're actually speaking Chinese, or, you know, an Avatarverse version of an Asian-based language. And I really hope I didn't offend anyone by just saying all of those words.
No, I think you tread carefully. You think you're good. Brittany, do you find it kind of perplexing, though, that I've opened up this Pandora's box in your mind of language and culture and how it's all the same, apparently? And
yeah, I never really thought about it until you brought it up, because, like we've been saying, like, this is a show where it's convenient for everyone to speak the same language, but in this world, like, you have these Northern Water Tribe people who are probably pretty isolated, except to maybe communicate with the Southern Water Tribe. But even then, there probably would have been dialect differences, because they're worlds apart. So I think that's a good point.
Isolation.
That they're
isolation.
Stop with Frozen. We have a lot of Frozen coming up on Once Upon a Time. I need as much break as possible from everywhere else. I need to, like, block out Frozen.
Yes, you do. Yeah, it's odd that the people even that live up in such a remote area would still speak the same language as people from, like, the complete other side of the world. And they don't even have, like, differences in, like, their vernacular, to the best of my knowledge, other than, like, I don't know. I guess Flamio is a good example of one that the Fire Nation uses, right? But it's not like there aren't different cultures. It's just that, I don't know. I wish that we had, like, a really succinct origin story of, like, you know, kind of like treading on thin ice here, but like an Adam and Eve kind of deal, where we learned of the origin of people in general, in the Avatarverse to see where this culture, where the cultures really came from. And McCall, I know I'm treading in thin ice in a lot of different ways, also because I am, as that's the most I can say there. But Adriana, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I accept it. It's a cartoon. Everybody speaks English, just like I accept that there is flying bison. So.
All right.
And cool. Hey, people can like bend fire. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So moving on from that point, some stuff going to happen with Zuko. The pirates came back. That was really unexpected for my forgetful mind. Really was cool to see them, I thought. And it was funny, too, because I can't remember who I was on with that pirate episode where Zutara first started when he's kind of holding out the necklace and is centered like, oh, Katara, you want this. But I didn't expect the pirates to ever come back. And the fact that they did, and they had such a big importance where they, like, almost murdered Zuko, and they looked like they did, really. It was really shocking. So, Adriana, did you think that Zuko died when you first watched this and that was it, and we were all kind of just,
no,
like, fooling you?
No! He hasn't even made out with Katara yet. How's he gonna die?
Oh, God. Brittany, were you fooled?
Oh, did you say Brittany?
Yeah.
I didn't hear you.
Enunciate, Mitchell.
Brittany, did you feel fooled by the fact?
No, because you were laughing as you were saying it, so I thought you were making a comment. No, I thought he was alive. I mean, yeah. Come on. It's not even the end of book one.
I don't know. If I was watching this for the first time, I think I could have been tricked, because that explosion happened in, like, three different angles. It was pretty epic. I don't
know. No, that would be so the opposite of epic. He hasn't had his showdown with Aang. It's like the episode before the finale. We're just not going to have Zuko in the finale, even though he's been the main antagonist this whole series.
You know, I have to say, Mikhail, that I'm seeing a lot less of Zuko than I expected. I thought he was in a lot more of season one, especially, and he isn't. And it's funny to me that we've probably, I don't know, if I had to try and toss out a number, I could say he's probably a million, like, I'm not good at math.
He's like in half of them.
I feel like we have one episode with Zuko, one episode without Zuko every week.
Yeah, that seems to be the balance. McCall, is it shocking you?
I think it is unusual, but I mean, kind of good antagonists, I think, do that, really. Like, Hannibal Lecter is only in, like, you know, I don't know, 15 minutes of Silence of the Lambs, right? But Anthony Hopkins won the Academy Award for that. I think that, you know, his role definitely expands. But, yeah, I mean, I think it was a smart decision looking back on it, because we could definitely, you know, I think they show us about as much of Zuko's nuance as they can this season. And, you know, and while still allowing him to function as a villain and an antagonist. So when, you know, when his character kind of expands, I think that it makes sense for it to have more focus in later seasons. Even though I still remember, like, rewatching, and some of the stuff that he does later on is not, I'm not talking about big things, but like smaller things in the way the show treats him were more surprising to me in retrospect, when you're like looking back and only kind of see, you know, the last curve of the arc, you know, like you're at the bottom of the rainbow and you can only see the end.
So I'm just going to assume that he's not going to die at all until this series finale.
Well, he does die in the series finale.
So now you don't know if he's joking.
I mean, he could. I'm just saying he's not going to die until the series finale.
Up until.
Obviously.
Up until. Okay. Yeah, well, that prediction.
It's not a prediction. Like, you guys just told us.
Okay. No comment.
He's definitely going to die before Korra starts. I can tell you that much, because everyone dies, as Natalie so wonderfully pointed out. She keeps dropping, like, these major things that she thinks that we should know, and I just get really upset every time she does. She's like, well, everyone's dead by the time. I'm like, what? I don't want to think about that.
Well, I mean, Aang has to be dead, because
I know,
he's the
but
Avatar.
I just don't want to think about it.
Good deduction.
She's like, oh, it's just really sad. I'm like, no, I don't want to. I'm like, Aang is still so young right now. Please let him be young for me.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that when you start watching Korra and you're kind of getting back into the world, it's a little traumatizing.
Oh my God, Alottl. It is.
Alottl.
Alottl. It is Alottl traumatizing. I don't know how to deal with myself when I'm seeing some of the things and feeling some of the feels in that show. It's because, like, I've had, like, 10 years of buildup by the time that I'm watching a Korra episode, and it literally punches you in the gut. It hurts. It is, like, I was telling Brittany that there are often times that I find myself just straight up crying watching these episodes of Atla because I know where it's leading to and I know what happens with it. I'm either, like, so proud for a character, I'm so sad for them, and that stuff happens usually during, like, the big epic fights of the episodes, because there's always, like, one really cool and relevant fight. It's not, like, shoved in. And those moments are just so well drawn out, and I love them so much that it just, I'm getting so sappy here. I really love cats, guys, and I can't hug every cat. Okay, so
what?
It was just a fake eHarmony.
That took a turn I wasn't expecting.
Video, yeah, good stuff. All right, guys. So while Mitch loves every cat, the Northern Water Tribe loves no one. What about that transition, huh? So they're not allowing Katara to join in all their reindeer games. They want her to go be a healer because apparently that's what women do. I mean, come on, really. It's presented to be.
You have to be a doctor, Katara.
It's presented to be as obnoxious as it feels, guys. I'll give you that much. But yeah, it was really sad that Katara wasn't given the same opportunities as Aang simply based on her gender. So, but McCall, I can imagine this is an era that you feel very strong about from the conversations we had in the past. So how do you feel about this waterbending guru?
Okay, I think my opinion is a little bit more nuanced maybe than you might expect, even though obviously I think that Katara should be able to learn waterbending. She should. But I remember when I was first watching this and just being a little bit like, I don't know, whenever you set something up like this in a television show, like somebody won't let somebody do something because of their gender, it's like they're a bad person, you know, and this is bad and we have to work against this. And it's just a little bit boring for me. So like, I was like, obviously I feel this way. Of course I feel that Katara should learn how to do waterbending, you know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, this is one of those times where like, okay, it's a kid's show and it's important that they tackle this kind of thing, but it's not as like interesting to me because it's so foregone for me, you know? Mm. And I mean, at the same time, like, I guess this is a pseudo, you know, it's pre-industrial society. It makes sense that there would be sexism along these lines. And part of me is, yeah, go ahead.
No, go finish your statement.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Part of me wonders, like, how much you can expect from somebody like Paku, who's, like, grown up like this, and, like, this has always been the way things are, and, like, you know, obviously it's totally wrong and don't know that's bad, but like I always like when people are like sexism is bad, somebody who's literally been like raised in this, like, totally, it strikes me as like, well, how are they supposed to know that really, you know?
Yeah, I think that he's presented in a villainous light too, so that we're meant to understand that he's more of a victim of his times. And that Katara is there to change him, and it's going to be a good thing when he learns that she's a viable waterbender. But Ariana, you have a point.
Well, I thought that it was actually a really interesting take on these sort of gender issues that usually come up in things like this, like compared to the other episode with Sokka being like, girls can't fight. Because in this one, it was more like, yes, you can still use your gift, but women utilize it in a different way. They use it to heal, whereas men use it to fight. And so he wasn't saying, like, you can't do it. He was just saying, you can't fight with it. Go do something more productive for you with it. So I thought that was interesting. But it made me think about, because at first I was just like, oh, this guy sucks. But then I was thinking about it, well, does like Katara really have any right to tell these people like what they should and how their culture should and should not be run?
To be like me. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, who's to say that our culture is better? Except sometimes you're wrong. And I think that this man was in some cases wrong. Like, I don't know how much we want to bring in, like, real-world things, but, like, I've had conversations with friends who have different values, and, like, I can understand that you think you're right, but you're not. You're wrong. It's just, like, 99% of the world thinks you're wrong, so you probably are.
I don't know if it's right or wrong. I think it's I think a touchier way of putting it is probably.
But sometimes you are. Sometimes you are wrong.
Well, it's misguided that you're looking for. I think not wrong. It's just that they don't know the difference between. They haven't seen the light. They haven't been shown that the world's a better place if we all kind of respect each other and allow each other to do as we want to do, rather than trying to mold people to the way that we think that they should be instead. But. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point that you wrote, Adiana, that it's like, should we, you know, just like be like Katara and Aang and be like, this is really dumb. I think that you guys are idiots and we're a much better tribe in the South. And like, I can't believe that you guys are still like this, but you know, it brings up a really interesting part of this universe that all of the women that are waterbenders are healers. I thought, as Canon had just spelled out, only special, powerful waterbenders could do the healing portion. So, ergo, all women waterbenders are powerful and special waterbenders, eh?
Hmm. Yeah, I thought I got that sense when they were visiting Zhang Zhang, I think his name was. Because the way he phrased it to Katara, he was like, oh, you're a healer. Like, he was very shocked. So maybe all women waterbenders are healers, but the rest of the world doesn't know that. I'm not sure, because they seem kind of isolated, and they're, like, the remaining waterbenders, and they're very closed off from the world, so...
I mean, I have to say that it's like a really practical form of bending, the fact that you can heal, because I quite literally burnt my finger making grilled cheese, and the first thing I thought of course, was Katara healing her hands in that river. And I was like, that is just, it is so convenient, because, I mean, it's going to come into play, obviously, as it's being set up so wonderfully, that Katara is a very unique waterbender from the fact that she wants to fight in the like, but she's a really good healer too. So, it's going to be really interesting to see that stuff unfold. And I really like the fact, if you haven't gotten this by now, that the waterbenders can heal. I think that that's really cool. So then, let's move on to the actual fight. So Katara is furious and she's, you know, kind of had the last of it when, he says that his name is Paku, right? Mikal?
Yeah, his name is Paku.
Right. So when Master Paku sees Aang trying to teach Katara at nighttime, when he's like, you know, Aang, you've screwed yourself over. I'm done teaching you. So then Katara and Aang kind of go to apologize, and then Katara's like, screw this. I'm gonna fight you. Come outside if you're a real man. And then the most epic of all waterbending fights happens, where Paku's kind of blocking all of her blows, but eventually he finds himself almost having to take more than just like a defensive standpoint to stop her, because she's like slicing ice at his face and, you know, like icicles and stuff flying around. And it was very fun. I'm a big fan of waterbender fights. So, Mikhail, was this a big moment for you too when you were rewatching this?
Yeah, you know, it was, because I remembered that they fought, but I didn't remember like exactly how it led up to that. And I liked that Katara was kind of like, she was willing to apologize to the culture. You know, she was willing to be like, I'm sorry that I offended you, but she wasn't willing to be like, I was wrong for trying to learn waterbending, you know, in a way that wouldn't have required you guys to teach me. And I liked that kind of thing. I love how determined she was at the end. She's just like, you know what, screw this. And how Sokka was like, you're not going to win. She's like, I know. And that's really, you know, that's really brave to go into a fight where, you know you aren't going to win, but you need to prove this particular point. And it could go really badly for you, but you just gotta try.
Oh yeah, he could have killed her.
This is one of my Katara admiration. Oh, I don't think he would have killed her, but.
But I mean, he had the ability to.
But she could have been really humiliated. She could have, you know, because also when you're a female and you're in this, in that position of being like the only one who does anything, if you don't do it like perfectly right, then everybody's going to say that all women can't, you know, do whatever, you know.
Right. When, like you look, when you're a groundbreaker in any field, I suppose it's a good thing to point out that there's a lot of pressure on you to be perfect, to prove your culture, your group, your identity correct and right and able.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, good on Katara. Katara's not my favorite either, but I do have some moments where I'm just really proud of her, and this is one of them.
I mean, and to quote Adiana, Katara is a flameo idiot, but a really flameo flameo, that doesn't make any sense when you put them two together, bad flameo idiot with superpowers. Brittany, this is your big change, isn't it, when she stands up for herself?
I wouldn't say big change. It was a momentary, like, I applauded her. But yeah, I realized she does have this great potential, and it is fueled a lot by her emotions. And I think that if she's able to contain them and learn how to channel it, she can be a very powerful waterbender. And I was very happy to see her stand up to this guy, because in the middle of the episode, she just goes and like goes to the healing lessons, and she, you know, takes the little class, but then she learns like the lore of her necklace. But then I was a little perturbed that she had to learn, like, how do I phrase this? So when they're all, like, about to go to bed that night, and she's like, oh, well, Aang, you can teach me, like, at night, and I can learn everything. I was still on my kick of, oh, she's going to go outside, and she's obviously going to get caught learning how to waterbend from Aang. Why can't you just wait until he learns it, and then... once you leave the Northern Water Tribe, then you can start honing your skills. But that defeated the point of this episode, which was to show that Katara is as equal a fighter as most of the male trainees from the Water Tribe. So I was very proud of her for sticking to her guns, and it worked out in her advantage at the end. But I will say that I really despised the way it was resolved. I did not like that he only agreed to teach her after he found out the connection to the necklace, and not because of the skills that she shown, that she showed.
Yeah,
I was so perturbed by that.
This is a very important necklace, and it's really relevant that we talk about this, because I mean, Aang just made Katara another necklace out of fishing line and the like, and I don't know where that went away, because it just kind of stopped existing past the episode that it was in, that was the fortune teller. So it makes me wonder, A, if that was meant to be some sort of betrothal necklace, and maybe even Aang didn't know that, but perhaps in another time and culture that he learned that from, that he forgot that property of it, he was engaging to Katara, maybe. I don't know. You can debate that, I suppose, if you had to.
I don't think that's a debate. I don't think he was ever engaged to Katara.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Especially because Katara didn't even know that that was an engagement necklace, so that makes me think that in the Southern Water Tribe, like, that wasn't a thing. It's only a Northern Water Tribe custom. Right,
well, on top of that, Adiana writes a good point that back to the Zutara scene in the pirate episode.
Wait, you didn't even ask me my opinion, Mitch.
I get skipping over me. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, kids. Says,
Mitch, are you being sexist against Ariana?
Yes, I'm being sexist against only one of the, one of the three women.
Oh, geez. And this is the one woman on here you do not want to go against.
No, it is not. I will talk to you about this, I promise. After we talk about the fact that Zuko was teasing Katara with a betrothal necklace... So, ship? I mean, that just had to be said. All right, now, Adiana, go ahead. The fierce Beyonce hair needs to be spoken about.
So that was Brittany. Okay, I keep stealing Brittany's greatest line, so I just want to make it very clear. Even though, yeah. So, I guess I think my opinion of Katara has changed a lot too, because I mean, I was defending her before just because I felt bad and I felt like she needed to be defended because I didn't think she was a bad person. Whereas I think some people do. I still don't understand why, but she was kind of like kind of a Mary Sue. Like, she's very, oh, it's fine, you burned me, Aang. No problem. I'm over it. And I was waiting for a little bit more from her. And in this one, when she finally got mad, I was like, yes, like, get it, girl. Because I was, when she finally let it out, that's when I was like, yeah, Katara is bomb. So I'm definitely on Team Katara now.
Absolutely, yeah. When Katara gets mad, I'm a happy camper, because she really proves her point. And it's just kind of like, I mean, screw you. Like, you guys think that you're so right in your culture, and you think that I'm not worthy of doing what I want to do in life. Well, I'm just going to show you that I'm going to do it regardless of what you think. I don't need to conform to whatever your ideas are. And I do agree, though, with Brittany, that it was a weird wrap-up, that the only way that she was taught was because of this As the World Turns kind of plot twist.
I thought he did it, to me, in my understanding, it was not like, I will only teach you because you're so-and-so's granddaughter. To me, it was like he finally realized that he's been doing this his whole life, and because he didn't respect his fiance as an equal human being, that's why she left him, and he needs to change or else his life is never going to get better.
Oh yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. What I was saying was that it wasn't her skills, like her skills alone were not the catalyst to change him. He had to have a love story attached to it that then triggered this like big cultural shift. Do you know what I mean?
True, but how cool is it that it's the guy who's motivated by the gushy love story and not the girl?
Yeah, I mean Grand didn't even really like him. Grand was just kind of
Grand was like, I'm out of here. And she's like, my beloved, my life.
And that was really brave of her, because she didn't have a flying bison. How did she transport herself from the north to the south? That was intense.
Through like war infested territory.
Seriously, yeah. Like Grand is a lot more like bad flameo than I think that we've given her credit for in the past, because she just is kind of this sweet old grandma who'll make you oatmeal cookies and she'll kind of be there to be like, love your brother and sister, ha ha ha. And now she's just like, you can kind of see where Katara gets her gusto, and it's really, really, really cool that she's just like, screw this culture. I mean, that's also where Katara not only gets her gusto of, like, her physical fight, I suppose you could say, because they're both very, you know, vehement survivors in a war-torn world, but obviously they both don't care for this culture, and they're going to fight against it. So Grand was way above her times, as you can still say Katara is in this universe, in this time period.
Wouldn't it be cool if there was, like, a red Avatar version, like, you know, where all the old people come back and they fight? And it would be like Grand and Iroh and like this guy, and it would just be all the old people like kicking Fire Nation butt.
Oh my god!
It's like they have to come out of retirement.
Oh yeah.
And like Grand has like a secret arsenal in her like igloo.
That's probably what's gonna happen in Korra. <Yeah.
laughs> Yes, that's how Korra is.
Korra is just like red Avatar.
It is indeed. How'd you know?
No, but something that else had struck me about this is that like, part of Katara's frustration, I think, and this is, you know, reading into it, but the fact is, like, they're at war, and, you know, part of the reason that Katara needed to learn waterbending is because the Southern Water Tribe has been, like, completely decimated, and, you know, it's almost like we don't actually have time for you guys to be like, oh, is this person worthy of being taught because of reasons? You know, it's like, no, you have a fighter. Teach them how to fight, you know?
Also, she's going to have to go, like, all around the world with Aang still and learn the other ones. So yeah. She needs to be armed.
She does, and I mean, you would think, yeah. It's funny, you would think more people would be kind of like jumping up to join Team Avatar real quick, or the gang as it's called in this series. It's really funny to me that they're still just like, these teenagers can protect the Avatar, whatever. When they're like meeting all these masters that would probably, in Mitchell's universe, be like, okay, we're going to follow you around and you're not going to do anything. We're going to like protect you, teach you. And you're not going to do anything dangerous. But everyone's just kind of like, Aang can do whatever he wants. And it's okay. He's only the Avatar. Only the last hope for us in this desolate universe. That's fine. No big deal. Anyone else find that strange?
I mean, I guess I didn't really think about it until you brought it up. But that's a good point. They've been to all of these places so far and met a lot of powerful people. And yet they're just like, okay, I hope you enjoyed your meal and your fortune. See you later.
And your fortune. You're going to be in a deadly battle. Goodbye.
Yeah, have a good flight.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's funny. That's odd. I don't know that there's too much more to that. Okay, so favorite scenes, guys. Mine was when Sokka was suggesting that everyone jump on his back and kind of shakes his butt, and Momo jumps on to be like, "All right, here we go." And it's a really funny moment, and the second shaking the butt moment of Avatar noted. Okay, I'll keep track, guys. The first being when Aang was like, you know, taunting Zhao on his boat and like, you can't get me. It kind of reminds me of like Squidward and SpongeBob, which is the worst reference that I do not want to make toward Avatar. But I remember like Squidward doesn't have the anatomy of a butt, much like Aang and Sokka really don't, up until when they're shaking it in the air. And then they kind of have the animation drawn in of it. And it looks kind of just goofy. But that's enough.
I'm not going to discuss this.
Okay, Mikal.
Or do they not have the anatomy of a butt?
Do you have the anatomy of a butt? Mikal, help us out here. What's your scene?
My favorite scene was where where the boat blows up, because I think there's a lot of tension in there. You really, you know, you don't necessarily know what's going to happen. You know that Zuko's alone, and you know that there's a plot to do something nefarious and blasting jelly. And you know, so I thought that was tense. I think the explosion, they spent a good long time giving us, you know, multiple angles on it. It definitely doesn't look like, oh, okay, just like part of the ship blew up. No, that entire ship blew to pieces. It's gone. And then seeing Iroh's reaction was, I think, really, I think I have no memory whatsoever if I actually thought originally that Zuko was dead. But I think if anything would make you think that, Iroh's reaction would, because that's just like it lends a credibility to the situation that it wouldn't necessarily have had otherwise, even though Zuko makes it out, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah,
and I think because we didn't really talk about this a lot, I think it was really interesting to see Iroh after that reaction being on board with Zhao, because I thought that Iroh thought that Zuko was dead. I really believed that until that reveal where I thought that like Zuko was gonna have to be by himself for a while, but the fact that he's on that ship with Iroh is really interesting.
Yeah, that gave me curious feels.
And didn't we see the rising up of another not an admiral, but like an officer that's probably being set up to do something in the future, if I'm going to say that in the least spoilery way possible. I think there was another character that was introduced, is what I'm saying, of the Fire Nation generals or the like, too, that we probably should have paid more close attention to. I don't even remember his name, so boo on us. Anyone else have a slight inkling of whom I'm talking about?
All I remember is Zhao going from general to admiral.
Yeah, he did, and there was another meeting.
Maybe I missed it.
Yeah. McCall, maybe?
Not cool.
No. Yeah. Well, he'll come about, and I'm sure that we'll care more when he's, like, in the action. Okay, Adriana, what's yours?
Wait, a Fire Nation person?
Oh, yeah, totally. I distinctly remember another Fire Nation person planning a fight against the northern water tribe and saying, and he was like, we can just go in and blow them up. And Zhao's like, no, there's a reason that they've survived as long as they have. They're a really intense culture and the ice is really brutal. It was that scene.
I don't think that guy comes back.
No? Oh, okay. Well, surprising that he got a name if he doesn't. Yeah, so, Ariana, what's your scene?
Mine was when Katara unleashes her full-on bitch powers. She ain't here to play no games no more, no old man. So, that was mine.
And I'll just mentally insert my flamio back on that word, okay? Brittany, yours.
Mine was when Sokka was attempting to woo Princess Yue because he was so cute and it was like little rom-com moments or like, meet me on the bridge. And he's like walking and following her boat and then falls in the water. He's like, ah, it was worth it. And then he carves her. He's like carving this beautiful, like statuesque thing when they were flying to the Northern Air Temple. And then when he has to give Princess Yue something, he gives her like this little gremlin, like piece of wood. And he's like, oh, actually it's supposed to be a fish. But I was like, you were carving this like beautiful masterpiece on the Appa's back. And now this is all you can come up with?
Performance anxiety.
He has very little time, Brittany.
I felt bad for him. I was like, oh man.
What do you guys think of Yue's character design? Because it's very unique that she has such stark white hair and, you know, the same skin tone of the people of her tribe. Newbies, I should say.
I remember who she's supposed to be from the movie.
Okay, then stop there, so Brittany.
I won't say anything.
Good. Brittany?
Oh, I don't know anything about the movie. So I will say that I thought that her hair was just like sort of like a Hunger Games type thing, like a symbol of being, you know, part of the capital. She's the princess.
That's cute. I like that.
But, you know,
we'll go with that. He's part of the capital. Well, all right. All right, favorite line.
I wonder who she's engaged to.
Yeah, actually, I do too.
Yeah.
I forget. Nicole, am I supposed to know?
I remember, but I don't think we've met him.
All right. Well, that's fair enough. No, I know that we haven't met him yet. I just can't remember.
I just want to be like, yes, I do remember something that happened further on that Mitchell doesn't remember. So let's just like put a pin in that and remember.
Yes, yes, indeed, indeed. All right. So fiancés aside, let's move on to the favorite lines. Mine was when Aang's kind of trying to defend Katara during one of her little explosions and he's like, hey, I'm sure she didn't mean that. Sokka's like, yeah, I'm sure she did. Sokka's been there, done that. He's seen plenty of Katara angries. All right, Mikal, what's yours?
Mine is when Iroh is talking to Zuko just before the explosion. He's like, it's a lovely night for a walk. Why don't you join me? It would clear your head. And Zuko's just like, lying in his bed, miserable, or just stay in your room and sit in the dark, whatever makes you happy. I just, you know, I love Iroh and I love how he accepts Zuko, and I thought that was hilarious because it's like every moody teenager and an authority figure has probably had that conversation where it's like, okay, don't try and make yourself feel better, just mope, that'll be good, you know.
Yeah, that teen angst, Zuko is chock full of it. Okay.
And also shout out to later on when he was like, no nephew of mine is going to take on, you know, whatever, without backup. And I'm like, yeah, family.
All right, Ariana, what's your favorite line?
Mine was when, Katara agrees to do that ridiculous fight that she's definitely going to lose. And Aang's like, you don't need to do this for me. I can find another teacher. And Katara is just like deadpan. She's like, I'm not doing this for you. Someone needs to slap some sense into that guy. So I love that. She just straight up said, like, this has nothing to do with you. This is about me. So I liked that.
Indeed. Yes, Katara did need
for once, it's not about you, Aang.
All right, Brittany, and then finally your favorite line.
Well, mine, I love the comedy on this show. I've said it a million times. And so when they have that wide pan shot of the crew leaving Zuko's ship, and it's just like the little group of them, and you see the ship in the background, and they're just like, good luck. And then Iroh comes into the room where Zuko's laying down, and he's just like, the crew wanted me to wish you safe travels. I was laughing so hard at that scene, and I don't know why. It was just so funny.
Hey, speaking of the comedy, I know that that little cough joke came back where Sokka or someone will make like a really lame joke and then there's silence.
That is my all-time favorite Avatar thing.
it's always so perfectly timed. It gets me every time. All right, guys, so any final thoughts on the Waterbending Master? I mean, for some reason, Adia, and I'm really interested to hear what you think is going to happen in the finale. So this is probably a good time for our newbies to give us finale predictions. So we'll start with you, Adiana, with how you think this is all going to go down and what's going to go down.
Well, I definitely know what's going to happen to the princess.
Yes, you do.
What's going to happen? The Fire Nation is going to come, and then everybody's going to like freeze them with their freezing powers, and Katara will be like, freeze, and Aang will fly around, and yeah, and Zuko will make it a special appearance, and then he'll be like, he'll be the one to corner Aang in some alley, but then like he'll like decide to let him go because he'll feel jaded, and he'll be like, how will I get him back? And I don't know.
Hashtag Frozen reference.
Will there be any Felix Felices drinking?
No.
Not required. Their skills are high above that. Okay, Brittany, yours.
Well, all of those ships are going to get to the Northern Water Tribe that the Fire Nation has launched. Mm-hmm. And I think that Zuko is going... I think we're going to end on a cliffhanger, first of all. So my predictions are that...
Are we now?
Ugh. Yeah.
Recall.
I mean, I feel like we have to.
Okay. No comment.
So I think that Zuko is going to be separated from Iroh finally, and he's going to have to decide what to do with Aang. But I think that he's going to decide to work with Aang because he's tired of the Fire Nation's crap. I just feel like it's time because we need more Zuko. We haven't had, like you were saying, we haven't had a lot of Zuko, and judging from the super fans' reactions to the just wait of the Zuko story, I feel like we need to spend a lot more time with him. So book two is time for Zuko.
Book two is time for Zuko.
I sense that we may have let the cat out of the bag.
You know, there was a cat that we let out of the bag a while back that I know it's going to come back to haunt us. McCall, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So,
is it Miyuki?
Yeah, Miyuki.
Is it now? I don't know. We'll have to see. All right, guys. So let's get back into listener feedback. We love hearing back from you guys. It's probably like the highlight of our weeks when we actually see like an iTunes review, which we have this week. Ooh, look at that teaser. Okay, guys. So if you want to get in touch with us, once again, our contact information, email, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, Twitter @re_watchable, this post on Hypeable. And like I mentioned, you will be loved by Karen this time around if you give us an iTunes review, because she will weave and meld and however you create a beautiful engagement betrothal necklace to you, and you can be her betrothal's beloved if you give us
word is betrothed.
Betrothed. Tomato, tomato. You will get something lovely from Karen, so just know that much. Okay, so yeah.
But only for 5 stars.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Less than 5 stars, no, you don't get Jack and Flameo.
No, you don't get Jack and Flameo at all.
If you give us less than 5 stars, we will leave and go to the Southern Water Tribe.
Yes.
Okay, guys, so listener feedback. The first one comes from a Twitter user, Peggy.
Mitch, the way you talk right now is so funny to me. The way you do the listener feedback, you're like an announcer, like a sportscaster.
And next on Rewatchable. I don't know. I get like a hosting voice on. It's kind of fun. I like it. It's like stepping into
it. I like it too. Shoes. It makes it feel more intense. Like,
well, good. Okay. All right. So, yeah, listener feedback first is from Twitter user Peggy Ruiz, who says, watching episodes 15 and 16 with my youngest daughter, which is so cute because I remember having a conversation on one of the Hypeable posts for this, and she was referencing the fact that she was watching the show, and it made me just think, like, okay, we really had to come up with, like, Flamio or something, because there's, like, you know, like a 7-year-old listening to this podcast in the car with their mom on the way to school, so it's not like we could just, you know, kind of let all things fly like we did with Veronica Mars and perhaps even Pushing Daisies. So we're reeling it back for you, Peggy. So I hope you appreciate that, and your parenting isn't failing because of us. And then we have feedback from another Hypeable podcaster, Friendly Chat, Jack Faruga, who answered when we asked, what kind of bender would you be? And Jack wrote back, Earthbender for sure. I wish he gave us an explanation, but I understand that.
Jack is your friend, isn't he, Mitch?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're like talking all the time, so it's kind of funny like reading feedback from him. I don't know. It's strange. It's like very foreign. But yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
And I don't know if we've done this yet, so it's very proper to follow up with this by saying in one sentence what type of bender we'd be and why. So,
oh, wait, but we need to read the comment first.
Oh, there's more on that?
Yeah, well, the reason we asked is because we got a Hypeable comment this week asking us.
Yeah.
Here, I'll read it right now.
Adiana's turn, go.
Okay. Yes. So we got a comment from Bridget, and she said, hey, Rewatchable, love the podcast. As a newbie when you first started, it was my intention to watch along with you, but I just couldn't stick with 2 episodes a week. It was just amazing. I watched the whole series in one weekend and also watched all 3 seasons of Korra. Wow, that's intense. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if you slept. Probably not. I applaud the newbies for having so much self-control. For me, Avatar is not a typical anime show. It really goes into each character in depth. You just fall in love with the characters. My question to the hosts is, if you were blessed with the ability to bend and you could decide what element, which one would you choose? So, which one would you choose, guys?
Water. I'd be a waterbender. I like the healing, like I mentioned, and I like the versatility of it, and I feel that it has the ability to do much more than the rest of the types of bending, including, if you're really creative, elevation, which I don't think many waterbenders think of, but every once in a while one does, and I get really excited. It's kind of like super geeky reference, like how Goku in Dragon Ball Z flies around on his Nimbus cloud. That's what I imagine a really advanced waterbender doing, flying around in a cloud. That'd be really fun. Nicole, what's yours?
Fire. I would be a firebender. I got a lot of anger, guys.
All right.
So you wouldn't be like a baker, like you wouldn't be using your firebending to like make pies. You would be destroying villages if you were angry.
I don't know if I would destroy villages, but I think that I feel a kinship to the flame, let's say.
Okay.
And then Brittany, what's yours?
I would definitely be water, especially after this episode with like where they live in like an ice village. I would love it. I love all things cold. Yeah. So, plus, I think water is, like, so cool. Like, air is also very, like, because it's animated, it's very fluid. But I feel like water is just, obviously, it's a fluid. But it looks really cool what you can do with it. And I always think of the scene whenever Katara is waterbending with, like, the little ball of water in Harry Potter, and I could, like, pretend to be Dumbledore in that really cool battle against Voldemort where, you know, he uses the water to, like, wash out the fire snake. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. That'd be fun. I'm sure that there's many a fan fiction that recreate that moment. It'd be cool if there is. That's the rewatchable challenge of the week. Come on, listeners. Find us fan fiction of Katara acting as Dumbledore to trap Voldemort in a water ball. And then, Adiana, what's yours?
Well, I don't know which one I would actually be, but she didn't ask that. She said, which one would you choose? And if I could choose, I would definitely pick airbenders because they can fly and they have those really cool, like, air balls and they play fun games. But I definitely don't have, like, the inner peace to be an airbender, so... that's the only thing I know. Of all of the 4 elements, I would never, ever be an airbender. But if I could choose, I would be.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
The thing with airbending is that you have to be a monk.
Yeah. You do, and that's kind of, that's a different lifestyle, and you will have to shave your head eventually, Adiana. So that's a thing. Mm. So depends on how.
But I think I could rock that look. I think I could. The big arrow on my forehead.
Totally.
Yes. I think it'd look good.
Yeah, I can. I can. I'm actually oddly picturing it now, and you would look pretty good with an arrow on your forehead. All right, and then let's just ratize it up. I'm gonna give McCall the iTunes review by Shelby W.
Shelby W. says, another great show from the Hypeable team. Yay! I'm currently listening to both the Veronica Mars and the Avatar The Last Airbender episodes and have listened to others in the past. The concept of the show, having both newbies and superfans, is unique and gives a great combination of views on character as well as individual episodes. I'm looking forward to the rest of the Atla episodes and future shows. Yay! And yay. Ariana has a comment there.
Oh, I just said that she's my new favorite human for writing this. But whenever somebody says that they're, like, watching Veronica, listening to our Veronica Mars episodes, it seems so bizarre to me. That seems like a lifetime ago. But very cool.
A long time ago, we did Veronica Mars. Had to. All right, guys. So, great episode. Really enjoyed being a host.
Really, really quick. I just wanted to say that this week we got a ton of comments and, like, feedback, and it was really awesome. So, I just wanted to say thank you for everybody. I know we can't read all of them here, but we do read all of them and appreciate all of them. So, please keep sending them. It's fun to have discussions with you.
Yeah, talk to us on Twitter. I like talking to people a lot.
Yeah, hey,
just no spoilers.
Shout out to Brittany once again that she's on Twitter, but she's a newbie, so please be careful with what you're writing to our Twitter account. You can say a spoiler, that's fine, but just kind of preamble that with a spoiler alert so that she knows that she can avoid that one, pass it off to one of us.
And we'll have a super fan talk to you about that.
But in the meantime, she'll try and figure out whatever the heck Nick's marketing PR team is trying to do with this.
Yeah, show. I'm on it. I'm on to you, Nicktoons. Yes.
She's on to you, Nicktoons. All right. Well, very fun episode. Thank you all for joining us. And we will catch you, Flameo Flamers, next week. In the meantime, I'm Mitch.
That was rude.
Finale, guys.
Yeah, it is a finale. It's going to be fun. It's a term of endearment.
Finale.
Yay, the finale.
I'm Mitch, guys. Take care.
I'm Michal.
I'm so Ariana. Oops, sorry, McCall.
That's okay.
I was trying to be, like, cool, and, like, right after the other, and I just made us sound silly. Never
That's
mind.
Okay.
Keep going.
I think we already did that.
Well, anyway, I'm Brittany.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.